Hillary Clinton recently revealed that she loaned herself $5 million to keep her campaign afloat. And some say and estimate that it may reach as much as $20 million of her own money to potentially become the President of the United States. Pretty interesting for a job that only pays $400,000 a year. Be it as it may, to this, Barack Obama recently boasted, upon hearing this information and news, that he was able to raise more money than Hillary even borrowed. Today, I'd like to discuss the issues of campaign finance reform, and which is better, using your own money in the process of getting votes, of getting your name out there, or money from the contributions of others? I believe the answer to this question is found in this week's Parsha. The Torah tells us, Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'yichu li truma. That the Torah tells us that this is an opportunity for the Jewish people to give tremendous donations in the construction of the Mishkan of the Tabernacle. Giving of their gold, their silver, choshet and copper, all different forms of wealth should be contributed for its construction. On this, many of the Mefarshim ask the question, then why does the Torah say, Vayikhuli, take? After all, the instructions are not for us to take, but rather for us to give. Now, on this, the Abiezer explains that sometimes the Torah writes in a Lashon Katsara, in an abbreviated form, and that really what the Torah is telling us is, Vayichu ma'anashim hanasunim. Vayitnuli, that the powerful officials, the treasurers, they should do the vayichu, they should take from those who gave. And in turn, after all that money is pulled together, then it should be given to the Mishkan. Today I'd like to understand another approach of why the Torah says, vayichu, take, and not to give. Rashi points out an additional issue, and that is that this whole episode really is completely out of context, out of order. However, Rashi says that this is one of the times in which we apply the principle of Ein Mukdam U'Muchar BaTorah, that the Torah is not written in chronological order. And he continues to explain that the Masa Egel, when it came to the Jewish people who committed the treachery of the sin of the Avodah Zarah, of the worshipping of the golden calf, Kodem Mutzivoim Lechas Mishkan. That whole episode, which we'll be reading about in a couple of Parshiot, in Parshat Kitisa, that is something which happened really before Parshas Truma. After all, on the 17th of Tammuz, when Moshe descended from Har Sinai to witness the Jewish people who created this idol, Nishtabru Haluchos, it was on that day that the first set of tablets were smashed. Uviyom HaKippurim, and the second time, another time when he descends, in which was the 10th day in the month of Tishrei and Yom Kippur, was a day in Etzras HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, where Hashem began to forgive the Jewish people for this sin. In Ulmacharas, on only after that day of Yom Kippur, Hischil Yisrael v'nedavas ha-mishkan, v'hukam be'echa b'nisan. This is the reason why, explains Rashi, that even though the Torah does not have this incorrect order, that really the construction and the donations for the Mishkan actually occurred only after the sin of the Egel HaZahav, Ein Mukdam U'Muchar BaTorah. But still, this really does not answer the question. I understand that the Torah is not always written in chronological order. But shouldn't it be? In other words, maybe I can understand if there's a logical explanation as to why it's written out of order, then write it out of order. But if there's nothing to be gained, then why is the Torah not written in this instance out of order? To compound the difficulty, the Medrash Tanchuma actually states that it must be written in order. And because there's a tremendous connection between these two episodes. Ki ha-mishkan hu kapara amasa egel. That it was when the Jewish people gave this money. That was an atonement for the sin of the Egel HaZahav. Why then would the discussion of the atonement, the construction of the Mishkan, be written even before the incident of the sin of the golden calf? And I believe to answer these questions, we turn to the very first Rashi. Rashi points out in the word Vayichu Li Truma. What does it mean, give Li to me, to God? Says Rashi, Li Lishmi. It should be given Lishmi to me for my name. And what does this mean? Obviously, we're giving this for the house of God. The Asuli Mikdash. We're not building it for ourselves. This is not our home. It's not a palace in which we will live. It's a home for God. What exactly is being said over here in Rashi, Li Lishmi? And I believe what Rashi is alluding to is sharing with us the tension and the struggle that is often involved in a donation. In fact, in perhaps every single donation, one must ask themselves, what is the motivation? Why am I giving this? What is the purpose of me giving this gift? Are you giving it in the hope of some reciprocal benefit? Maybe with some ulterior motives to get something back? On this, the Torah says, that's a vayichu. Such an individual that does this is really not giving. Your whole intention is to take. This explains Rashi. Is not the proper motivation for a gift, for tzedakah, especially for the construction of the Mishkan. Rather, it must be Li, Lishmi. To give to the Mishkan, you must do it Lishma. You must do it for no other reason except Lishem Shemayim, for the sake of heaven, with no ulterior motives, with no reciprocal benefit. And this is why this act of giving is written specifically over here, out of chronological order. Now it's true that this donation, the construction of the Mishkan, is mechaper, does atone for the golden calf. But even so, that should not be the underlying motivation for us to give. That we should only be giving in the construction of this Mishkan in order that I will be forgiven for the sin that I had committed for the golden calf. So much so that the Torah writes the giving of the funds to the Mishkan before the sin of the Egel HaZahav, so as not to give the perception that this was the reason why the Bnei Israel gave, for a reciprocal benefit. Instead, it was given Li. It was given Lishma. It was given for the sake of God. Now, even though it's true, it was a vayichu that they in fact took because they were forgiven for the tremendous, tremendous sin of the Egel HaZahav. But the motivation that they had when they gave was for no ulterior motives, no reciprocal benefit. It was Li. It was Lishmi. And this struggle is not only to the one who gives, and the one who writes that check, but it's also the one who receives it. We find this often in political elections, such as in this year, 2008. It's estimated that each candidate will need as much as $500 million apiece to compete, a record sum. To remain competitive, it's absolutely impossible, unless you are one of the wealthiest people in the world, to be able to come up with those monies all on your own, out of your own savings account. Instead, you must turn to others. But what is their motivation? To remain competitive, sometimes presidential candidates may need to turn to corporate lobbyists to contribute in their elections. But again, what is their motivation? And should it be done? And on this is the major dispute between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. According to Hillary, she is of the opinion that one can receive donations and support from corporate lobbyists, and that does not necessarily mean that they will have any power or any more influence once that individual is elected as president. Barack Obama, on the other hand, in a speech in Des Moines, Iowa, on November 10, 2007, said, quote, "I am in the race to tell the corporate lobbyists that their days of setting the agenda in Washington are over. I have done more than any other candidate in the race to take on lobbyists and won. They have not funded my campaign. They will not get a job in my White House, and they will not drown out the voices of the American people when I am president." And he alludes to the concern of what lobbyists potentially can do. That lobbyists are giving money, thousands upon thousands of dollars, to one's campaign. Perhaps it's to write national policies, such as Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force of oil and gas lobbyists who developed national energy policy. This is the concern. The concern is, when someone gives, what is their motivation? Is it a li, lishmi? Are they doing and giving it to me, lishma, for no other sake but to help my cause? Or is it vayichu? Are they really doing it for ulterior motives? They wish not to give, but ultimately to take. And this goes far beyond U.S. elections. Israel is to receive, in 2008, $2.4 billion in foreign aid from the United States. But one again must ask, when they're getting $2.4 billion, at what cost are they giving? At what point do we say that we must listen and accept the pressure that is being pressured upon us? Are these monies just given, or is there an asterisk by them? To potentially give away more land for a so-called peace process. When we're dealing with individuals who, as we have read, that in a southern Negev town of Dimona, Monday morning, there was an Arab terrorist who carried out a suicide bombing. And of course, the continual Qassam rockets that continued to slam into the southern Israeli city of Sderot. We ask ourselves, when we're going to Annapolis and we're going through the motions of peace, is this really realistic? But can we speak? Can we speak our minds when $2.4 million is hovering over our heads? And one could look and say, well, maybe now that Arafat is no longer in the picture, maybe their new leader, Abbas, is more interested in peace. And on this, unfortunately, I feel the answer is no. In fact, although we were combing through the papers, and all it discussed was the tremendous Super Bowl victory of the New York Giants, but it fails to mention the most important things that are happening in this world. Leader Abbas recently mourned for a 3-day period the loss and the death of George Habash. George Habash is known as a murderer, a terrorist, a leader of the Popular Front of the Liberation of Palestine, an organization that in 1976 hijacked an Air France plane, leading to the Entebbe raid, as well as in 2005, among other things, a plot to kill Rabbi Avadia Yosef. And Abbas ordered that a 3-day mourning period should occur for the loss of this man, and that the flags should fly at half-mast. And again, we must ask, to this we negotiate, to this we give land. But unfortunately, $2.4 billion does have an asterisk. We hope and pray for Lee Lishmi that the Israeli leadership, the Knesset, should have the ability and power to not be influenced, that they should not be pressured to make the decisions that are not in the best interests of Eretz Israel. That although it may be necessary for them to take, but they should not have to give everything back in the process. Good Shabbos.